Father, be with me in my speaking, and in all our hearts, as together we try to discern your message. This may not be the easiest message to contemplate at the moment, given that we are still in the throes of the COVID-19 pandemic, with all the pain and loss and disruption that it has caused to so many people. But sometimes it is the adversities we face and the things that go wrong in our lives that can cause or enable us to grow in ways that wouldn't otherwise have happened. In our story from Genesis, we hear of a situation where there is obvious pain and distress and sadness for all the people mentioned in it. Having been childless until his late 90s, Abraham is now the father of two sons. With the encouragement of his wife, Sarah, he had Ishmael with Hagar, one of his household slaves, and sometime later, in answer to long and heartfelt prayer, he and Sarah had Isaac. This might appear wonderful, but it seems that following the birth of her own son, Sarah has a change of heart about the presence of Ishmael. She doesn't want Ishmael to inherit from Abraham and tells him to send the boy and his mother away. I don't know how this would have been viewed by people at the time, but to me it seems hard-hearted and unjust, especially given that it was Sarah who suggested that her husband try to have a child with her slave girl, who she offered to him. Who knows how Hagar felt about that part of the arrangement, but having provided a longed-for child, who Sarah initially regarded as her own, she and her child are being sent away, with nothing but some bread and water, for a journey to who knows where. So Sarah is unhappy about the presence of Hagar and Ishmael, who she sees as a threat. Abraham, we are told, is very distressed by Sarah telling him to cast them out. What loving father would want to do such a thing? Hagar has lost her home and security and is in despair at the prospect of seeing her son starve to death in the wilderness. And Ishmael has lost his home, his father, his possible inheritance, and his brother and playmate. Isaac seems to be the only one probably too young to have an opinion on all this loss and unhappiness. How on earth, you may wonder, does God come out of this complicated and unhappy state of affairs? Well, if it had been purely an earthly situation, then at the very least Hagar and Ishmael probably would have starved to death, and Abraham's distress would have been compounded. But God is at work here. Much as he is upset at the prospect of sending Ishmael and his mother away, Abraham trusts in God when he tells him to obey Sarah's wish, and that with regard to Ishmael he says, "I will make a nation of him also." We then hear that when Hagar has run out of food and water and puts her son under a bush so she won't have to see him die, she is visited by an angel, telling her too that God will make a nation of him, and water is provided to sustain them. By the end of the passage, we are told that they both survived, that Ishmael lived in the wilderness and eventually married. In time, he does indeed become the founder of a nation. Had he stayed in Abraham's household, he would probably not have done this, and likely have remained resented by Sarah and of lesser status than his brother Isaac. Growth came out of adversity. Life was complex in Abraham's day, and it still is for us here and now. It probably always will be. There are seldom, if ever, any concrete answers or solutions to the problems we face, and rarely only one right way to do something, or one clearly right path to follow. Most of the time, they're complicated by multiple factors, and what-ifs, and maybes, and if-onlys. We may not want to be the one who has to sort out some particular problem or situation, especially if it's not of our making. But instead of automatically feeling fearful or resentful or negative about it, we can view it as an opportunity to serve, and in so doing, we can learn and grow. Last week I was listening to the autobiography of a police officer who said that in the early part of his career, domestic violence was seen as an area of policing that nobody, including himself, wanted to deal with because it was so complicated and difficult. However, he was put in charge of a unit where he had to face this, and he described how over time he had learned to understand a great deal, particularly about the psychology of victims and the circumstances and attitudes that made them into victims and kept them there. He went on to have a long career as a police officer, where he witnessed some of the worst effects and consequences of violent crimes, which along the way took a serious toll on his own mental health. But ultimately, he described how police attitudes to these crimes have changed over the years, and while there is still a very long way to go, they have improved. He had not shied away from a difficult job that no one wanted. He had stepped up and made a difference. I never cease to be amazed and heartened by the stories I hear of other people who have done likewise. It's tempting to assume that such people are extraordinary, and in some ways they are, but not because they are uniquely qualified or skilled or confident in the knowledge that they can do whatever task has come to them. They are extraordinary because they take it on regardless and do the best they can with what they've got. Jobs or tasks or services or whatever we see them as don't have to be big or spectacular to be of worth. Indeed, it's often seemingly small things that can make a big difference to those on the receiving end. Kindness, patience, listening respectfully, believing someone or believing in them. Using our own experience of adversity to help others see a way through theirs can be both encouraging and empowering for them and us. Only this week we have seen how Marcus Rashford has used his own experience of going hungry when he was a young boy to persuade the government to make free school dinners available throughout the summer holidays. This will make a big difference to a lot of people's well-being in more ways than just filling their stomachs. Something good has grown out of adversity. One of the things I'm learning, very slowly, is to stop expecting that there is any such thing as a once-and-for-all answer to problems. In the past, I've thought that if I looked hard enough and tried hard enough and for long enough, I would find these answers, and in finding them, all would be well, and I'd have arrived at a place of safety and security. Of course, it didn't happen. Instead, for much of the time, life felt like a long, complicated, often painful, winding road that was nearly all uphill. Each time I got to a bend in the road and I could see round it, instead of the hoped-for easy bit or respite or desired result for all the effort, there would just be more uphill. Depressing, or so I thought. I'm now learning to see things differently. I'm slowly realising that the adversities and mistakes, the disappointments and losses that I have experienced, just as many people do, and sad and awful as some of them have been, they have caused me to grow and to become far more capable than I otherwise might have been, and enabled me to be there with others with greater understanding and empathy when needed. I really do believe that God is always there for us and with us, especially in the difficult times, helping us to bring growth from adversity, if we are open to it. One final thing, just in case you thought I'd forgotten. Happy Father's Day to all the dads, granddads, godfathers and father figures out there, especially those of you who have brought good things out of difficulties in your own childhoods, and those of you doing your best with difficult situations now, and teaching those in your care how to do the same. Enjoy your special day.